Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, as Tara Reid says, with my friends in Canada, I wish you guys were all here.
She's so nice.
That's very nice, right? Every time I go on vacation, I'm like, I'm glad none of you people are with me.
Yeah, because that's exactly what I want to do. Like, you go to the beach, you go to Canada, vacation spot that it is, and you're just thinking to yourself, I just wish all my Twitter followers were here.
Right. Like, if I went to Toronto for the weekend, I would maybe, like, yeah, I want to see the Basketball Jones guys. But other than that, I'd be like, I don't want to deal with anybody. I'm on vacation.
I only want to see my Twitter followers if I'm at the Grand Canyon so I can push them off.
Exactly. Well, that sounds like murder, but sure.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
What do you want to talk about?
Well, we recorded 3 podcasts on Tuesday. Is that right?
Yeah.
So we kind of missed a little bit of the weekly news. And right after we were done recording, or shortly after, Michael Beasley was released.
Be easy.
He is no longer a Phoenix Sun. He is a free agent. And based on the comments of the organization, it's clearly because of the marijuana charges that could be brought against him, right?
Or the domestic violence one. He's got that one, too.
Yeah, that's true. There's just been a lot.
Or more shots than points. Or he doesn't take his career seriously. Or...
I mean, there's just a lot of issues, and some of them I feel bad about. Some of them are just stupid. And it's – with Beasley, it's just – at a certain point, he needs some kind of leadership, right? And he's had different things. Like, he had Pat Riley and Dwayne Wade. And maybe if he had stuck – maybe if he had been able to stay there, things would have worked out better for him because it's more structured. It's a better, you know, environment, I think, for fostering – the right attitude of work, but they had to trade him in order to clear cap space, which is understandable. And then in Minnesota, he had a year in which he was allowed to do whatever the hell he wanted under Kurt Rambis, and he was supposed to be, you know, oh, he'll turn things around. He's with his friend Kevin Love, and that'll help him get him going. And then Rambis was gone. Rick Adelman comes in, has kind of a no-nonsense, you know, look at life at this point, and it just said, you're not doing what I told you to do. You know, you're out of the rotation. You're gone. And then he was, you know, allowed to become an unrestricted free agent instead of a restricted free agent. They clearly didn't want him back. And then he gets to go to Phoenix, where there's upheaval within the system. You know, they're rebuilding. They go through a change with the decision maker for the organization. They go with changes at coach, two changes at coach, and then he has these like problems that keep popping up with, you know, allegedly with marijuana and all this stuff. And eventually it just became too much. And now it's gotten to this point of, well, he's too talented. He's got to go somewhere. And I don't know that he does have to go somewhere at this point. I mean, how many chances do you keep giving him before he is just like not worth the trouble? I mean, I get, you know, like, I guess the idea of if he went on a minimum contract, then it's a no risk. And I get that. It's true, and there was immediately talk of maybe the Lakers should try to get him. Like, no, the Lakers should not try to get him. I don't think you want to put him in L.A. Like, he's just – at a certain point, he's just not worth the trouble, right?
So it's a really interesting issue because if you ask me, is Michael Beasley a problem for a team, I would say absolutely 100% yes. But if you ask me, oh, so it's like the marijuana thing is like a problem, I'm like, no, it's illegal, and that's an issue for him. But I live in Colorado, right? Where it is decidedly not a problem here.
Right.
And I don't use, because I have a toddler, and that would work out very badly for me, and I didn't use it before because I lived in places where I could get arrested for it, and I obey the law. But I don't have, like, a moral problem. I don't think that Michael Beasley using marijuana is some sort of reflection upon his impact with the team, because, to be quite honest, there's a lot of indications that we'd have to go down a pretty long list of guys in the NBA if we're going to start going down that road, and I'm not willing to.
Right.
My problem with Beasley is that he's got no discipline on the court. He doesn't have discipline in practice. He doesn't have discipline with his coaches. He doesn't do what he's asked. He seems to think that he's above it. He has always taken an attitude of just joking around and not taking things seriously, and I don't have a problem with being lighthearted, but you have to be able to put in the work, and he doesn't want to do that. He was massively overpaid, and I think that was like a big part of this decision, honestly, was that Ryan McDonough came in and was like, so this ain't gonna work. This has got to go. You know, I don't know who signed off on this, but this has got to go. And so, you know, he wasn't a good enough player. Somebody asked me the other day if Patrick Fenelon, I believe is who it was. He asked me, like, what does he need? Like, who does he need to work with? And I was like, and I said, he's got to be with somebody firm that's still going to give him enough love. Like, he has to be in a situation where it's him and Cousins kind of have a similarity, only Beasley is much more of a problem than Cousins. Warning sign number one, when I say you're more of a problem than DeMarcus Cousins, that's bad.
That's the thing is he is – Beasley is not a bad guy. Like, he is a very joking, like, almost lovable personality. It's just that that's great in a post-game celebration of a win. When you're trying to put in work and put in schemes and do all this stuff to get your team focused and get your players focused, that only goes so far. And then it's, you know, kind of cut the crap and let's get to work. And with him, you know, you ask who he needs, or Patrick asks who he needs. Honestly, I think he needs John Lucas. Like, John Lucas should be his life coach of trying to get him at least in the right frame of mind to be a professional athlete. John Lucas has had, you know, he has had his problems. They're well documented. Had his problems with drugs. He got it, you know, his life together. He's become a really good mentor for young guys who are trying to make the league. And I think that if this could be a wake up call to Beasley, and he could be like, all right, who do I get to focus me? John Lucas would be the guy.
That's a good suggestion.
But you know, he's got to actually want to do that.
When I was asked a question, I kind of was going through a bunch of guys. And a lot of it is, you bring up Pat Riley and Dwayne Wade. That is proof that the tough love approach isn't going to work.
Right.
Right. Because Wade is, it's actually really a credit to Mario Chalmers, because Chalmers could have just completely broken down from the amount of pressure that's been on him from Dwayne Wade. Like, Wade holds him to this ridiculously high standard. At age 27, he still makes jokes about Chalmers.
Right.
Like, he still yells at him on the court at age 27. Chalmers does nothing but come back and work harder. And I feel like that's one of the reasons I really love Rio, is that Mario Chalmers has taken all this abuse and doesn't get discouraged. He hasn't lost his starting spot. He held on to his spot when the Big Three was formed. He's thrived. He's been a big part of their finals wins. He comes to work. He does the job. Like, when he screws up, he screws up, and he doesn't get discouraged by any of the criticism, which is both a blessing and a curse, but it's hilarious for the rest of us, but it's a different kind of deal. Somebody said, like, well, what about Doc Rivers? And I'm like, I don't think that's going to work, because Rivers doesn't really have all that much patience. Doc's great. If you're a young guy that wants to improve, he's going to make you the best that you can be. Somebody said, well, what about a guy like KG? I think KG is like what DeMarcus Cousins needs. Like, Cousins, I think, needs somebody who can identify with his position specifically.
Yes.
And be able to kick his ass. Like, he needs someone who is the baddest man in the room. He needs that very badly. Because, like, Chuck Hayes is a really good person in the locker room for them to have. But Chuck Hayes can't say, I've been the best player on a team.
Right. He can't relate to the presence that Cousins needs to be on the court. Off the court, he's great. Right. But you need that guy who says, you know, this is how you need to conduct yourself off the court. So on the court, this is how you conduct yourself. And Hayes only has half of that equation.
And then you think about, like, Rick Adelman or McHale, and both of those guys are kind of the same as Rivers, where these experienced coaches reach a point where they're like, I'm not willing to work with you anymore.
Right.
I'm too old. They pull the lethal weapon. I'm too old for this.
and that was the thing with Adelman. It was mostly, you know, he even said that, you know, he said this on his first media day with the team. He said potential gets coaches fired. And Adelman is, you know, in his late 60s. He's at a point where all he cares about is winning. He wants to win. He wants to, you know, try to get that elusive title that he's never been able to get. And Beasley doesn't fit into that plan at all. Beasley's not a win now kind of guy. You know, Beasley's a hey, maybe someday the sun will shine on him and everything will be right with the world and he'll get it together and things will click. There has to be a big process to get things to click, which I think we kind of forget. I think we just assume, well, eventually a guy's going to turn a certain age and realize, hey, I need to get going on these goals. That's not a thing that just happens. Like, that, there is no switch. There is no click. There is a series of events that have to happen in order to get a player mentally and physically ready in order to be able to flip that switch eventually. And Beasley's in no position to make those series of events happen.
Completely unrelated to your discussion of where's the best place for him, I know where I want him to go.
Where?
New York.
Oh, God.
Hear me out.
No,
Hear me out. If J.R. Smith could be sixth man of the year...
God, I wish I had a sandwich to go make right now.
If J.R. Smith can be sixth man for the New York Knicks, can't Michael Beasley...
No.
He's the seventh man of the year?
No.
They've got Kenyon Martin, J.R. Smith. Look at their entire team structure. Isn't Michael... Can't you imagine a lineup featuring Amari Stoudemire, Andrea Bargnani, and Michael Beasley?
No.
Dare to dream, Zach.
Hey, I know juggling unlit dynamite is fun, but wouldn't you want to do it through this field of people who are holding lit sparklers?
I kind of also, the other team I had that had the idea of was the Grizzlies. That was the other one I had the idea of.
Maybe Zebo could do. Well, actually, I think if Lionel Hollins was still there, yes.
Yeah. He would, they would be very good to him. Zach would be very good to him. And good for him. Because it'd be like, of course you can smoke weed. Just don't be an idiot. Like, that wouldn't be a problem there. Right. Not that I know that Zach Randolph smokes weed. He probably doesn't, considering the fact that he's like become a family dude. By the way, Zach Randolph's Instagram photos of him with his daughter were just freaking adorable. Just putting that out there. Freaking adorable. His kid is cute. They've got a good team structure. I think you have to have an identity like that. But even then, man, I can't look at some of these teams that he's been on and say, wow, he was just in a lot of situations with no leadership. He's had those opportunities. Again,
That's the thing is that it drives me crazy. It's always, well, he's just never been in the right situation. What is the right situation? It's either been the coach didn't trust him, no one tried to lead him, he played the wrong position. None of that stuff is true. Like, I can tell you from firsthand experience, he played both positions in Minnesota. He played for a coach who gave him free reign. He played for a coach that gave him a structure, and he had one of his best friends from his teenage years on his team, and none of it worked. So what's the answer? That's the thing. There is no answer. I just don't think he's worth the trouble at this point. And it's all this, you know, pie in the sky. Hey, maybe someday. No, maybe no day. Like, none of this is ever going to work.
We talked about on Monday, we talked about Derrick Rose and how – or Tuesday, we talked about Derrick Rose and how – sometimes there are these guys that it's happened a lot in the league where there's an injury and the guy's just never the same. There are a whole lot more guys. There is a whole lot more guys. There are a whole lot more guys?
There are
a whole lot more guys.
Yeah.
That fall into Beasley's mold of they just never got it. They just never – they just didn't have it. They don't have the mental makeup. They don't have – you know – I think this kind of dovetails into another conversation, which is Bill Simmons, who I doubt many of you have heard of, wrote a really great piece on
Tracy McGrady. He's a promising young writer.
Wrote this really great piece on Tracy McGrady, and one of the things that really talked about was how he just wasn't a leader. Like, Jeff Van Gundy loves him, and Jeff Van Gundy was like, he's not a leader. I shouldn't say even though, because it's just kind of an element. And we kind of forget that. If you're a great player, you're supposed to be a leader, and that just doesn't necessarily happen all the time. I don't think you can do that. People that are just naturally not good at leading. And Beasley is definitively not a leader.
No.
But if you're not a leader, you have to have at least the work ethic to follow.
Right.
And he's neither a leader nor a follower. He's a sitter.
Yeah.
Like, he just sits. And so
That's the thing about, you know, you look at someone with a similar personality. And I think you could look at Dwight Howard and say, these guys like to have fun. They're jokesters. They like to, you know, really make it a lighthearted affair. But on the other side of that, Dwight Howard puts in a ton of work.
Yeah.
Like, that guy is an extremely hard worker. Regardless of what you think his personality is or what you think his priorities are, that guy has put in an enormous amount of work, the amount of work you need to put in to be a great player. And that's the difference between that kind of personality.
I think when I was 21, I would be very receptive to Beasley and be like, you know, I think he's so talented. You just can't let him go to waste. Like, you've got to find a way to make this work. And I think after having worked for a living, that's one of the things that's really changed a lot of my perceptions on life. And because part of me is I make these transitions all the time to if we were to put Beasley into a normal situation, a non-sports environment, if I'm an office manager and Beasley shows the kind of behavior that he does on these teams, not just in terms of the off-court stuff, but the on-job stuff, he'd be fired in like a week. Like, you said earlier, you're talking about his personality, and I was like, hey, he's the kind of guy that I would love to see at GameStop.
Right.
Like, he wouldn't bother me. He'd just kind of sit in the corner playing on his phone. If I had a question, he'd answer it, and then probably not well, but he'd answer it, and then he'd probably make a joke when I was buying the game, and I'd be like, later, dude, and he'd be like, all right, man, and then we would leave, and everything would be fine. But even then, I'm kind of like, yeah, but he might show up late, and the register might not be right. I still might have to fire him if I worked at GameStop. Like, and you have, and this is his decision to make. This is partly his decision to make, and I'm not denying that there are probably a lot of factors that go into Michael Beasley's situation, and I'm sure his life has had a lot of difficulties. A lot of people's have, and I just, at some point, I can wish that he gets his life on track and hope that he can, and believe, I do believe it's possible if he grows up and actually does mature and becomes a different person, he can get there. Some people don't mature until they're in their late 20s.
Some people don't ever mature.
Right. And that's just how it is, and that's okay. We don't have to act like it's Michael Beasley's not a tragedy. It's not even a shame. It's just, no. Dude didn't make the most of what he did, what he had.
Exactly.
He still got paid more money than I'm ever going to see. So...
And he made more money, and he made extra money when I went to his estate sale when he left Minnesota. So he's got businesses going on. He'll be fine. He can just keep selling his stuff every time he moves to a new city. I'll keep going and buying.
You can just keep going. You can make a blog that was nothing but items.
I'm just gonna book a trip to Phoenix for next week. Go to his estate.
If you were tanking, would you be willing to give him a minimum contract?
No.
Just because of the effect on the locker room?
Yeah, I think at this point there's enough evidence to show you that even if he is like, okay, he averaged 19 points, I think his third year, his first year with the Timberwolves, he averaged 19 points a game, but it wasn't a good 19 points a game. It was a bunch of crap, and so I think like even that like. Yeah, he's talented, but he's never even shown glimpses of that talent being something you want. At least not at the NBA level. In college, he was fantastic.
Yeah, I have time for nasty admission time. I was very – well, I was young and inexperienced and foolish at age 27, but I definitively felt that Beasley should go ahead of Rose in the draft. I was positive at this. With the Chicago Bulls, because I couldn't let go of that Baby Bulls era when it was after the Baby Bulls. It was that era when the Bulls were kind of Eastern Conference sub-contenders, when they had Heinrich and Gordon, and they were both considered really great, right, and dang. And they looked like they were actually going to be, like, they were supposed to be up there with the Pistons for, with the Celtics for challenging in 2008. And that was the year they completely fell apart, and they fired Skiles on Christmas Day.
Right.
I was still holding on to the idea that they just had a bad year, and I was like, well, Beasley fits in really well. Like, you just slot him in, and you go forward, and you're set. And obviously that was remarkably stupid, and it shows you that you need to have more of an indication. But I will tell you like what the flip side of that is. If you say Beasley had work ethic and questionable decision-making, so did Andre Drummond.
Yeah.
Here he is now. So.
Yeah, he is someone who hasn't done anything in the NBA. I mean, I like Drummond, but I wouldn't say like, look, Drummond's fixed everything. Like, he had a cool rookie year.
Yeah, but I guess most of it is that his attitude has been nothing but what you want to hear from a guy. Like, he's been dedicated to getting better. He seems like an engaging personality. He seems like not a problem in the locker room at all. Now, I could be totally wrong because I'm not in there, but I haven't heard any sort of indication that Andre Drummond is anything but a guy everybody wants around.
Sure.
So,
What
else we got?
I don't know. You want to just talk about the Bucks? There was this whole Jay-Z sold his share of the Nets to Jason Kidd, and it made me think like, oh, that's a weird situation because now Kidd is part owner, part coach.
Right.
And then maybe think of the Timberwolves situation with Flip Saunders, where he's the president of the team, but he's also a part owner. So what does that do for job security? And a whole thing, but
I'm not also the president. I'm also a client.
Right. Exactly. Isn't that a weird situation that we're finding? I mean, maybe this isn't as rare as it seems. Like, I know it used to happen more in the past, but I just figured in today's environment, it seemed like less of a marriage in that sense of, hey, you get to run the team on the court and you get to be an owner. I just find that to be a weird, almost incestual type of situation in business terms. Because how do you get rid of an owner as a coach?
Yeah, that whole...
Do you make him sell? Like, what happens like, there?
Like, Billy King has... Billy King has both more power, has power over, and is held by power by his coach.
Right.
It's a weird, that's a weird environment. I don't know. I think it's, there's a lot of situations that can become disastrous. I think you're banking on, you have such a good relationship with him, it could never go that bad. But man, I think that's like a bad thing to gamble with. It just feels
I mean, how many times do you hear stories about friends that went into business together and now hate right. each other's guts?
Right,
like that. Even family members, like that stuff happens. I don't know. It's a weird gamble to take, and I find it's an unnecessary gamble to take.
Maybe it's like written into the contract that if he gets fired, he has to sell or something. I don't know. Like he doesn't have majority power. It's mostly, I guess, just a profit thing.
Yeah, it's sure. I mean, it's a very small stake in the team. Like Jay-Z owned a very small like stake in the Nets, but it's still a stake. And I just feel like that seems illegal to say I'm going to fire you and now you have to sell your shares.
Yeah, it's a kind of a weird situation. I guess with the Nets, I don't really kind of blank at almost anything anymore.
Right. and then there's like the idea of, well, since they have ownership of the team, now they'll try to make things even better so that they're more successful. It's like, but some people are just bad at their job. Like Jason Kidd could end up being just a terrible coach. Flip Saunders could end up just being a terrible GM, but they want to be better so they can be more successful. Like that doesn't make them better at their job. It just, I guess it makes them maybe potentially work harder. But
what's your general feeling on Saunders so far? I mean, there, nothing has happened, so it's hard to judge, but I noticed on Twitter that you seem cautiously optimistic and want to make sure that there's not undue criticism too early in his reign. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, I feel that way about just about any decision maker in the NBA where it's like everything's become so polarizing. Every move is either one of the best moves or one of the worst moves. And there's no just like, that's a decent move. Like you look at the OJ Mayo signing in Milwaukee, which, hey, that'll help us segue in a minute. You look at that move. I don't think that's a great move. I don't think it's a bad move. I can get that. I can get behind that. Like that's a decent move. That could end up being good. That could end up being bad. But, that's a solid move. I don't think you have to, be on one side of the spectrum or the other. And that's how I feel about, kind of Flip Saunders' reign right now. Like, the fans had all these expectations of the team, and then they went out the window because of injuries. And Flip came in and said, I don't really like that direction. I think we can tweak it and go this way. And people like kind of freaked out because they had this set goal of this is who we're going to have. This is what it's going to be. And then it was all of a sudden like taken from them. And they had to readjust their expectations of what to look at on the court. And whether you believe in Flip Saunders' direction or not, I think he's obviously executing a plan that he believes in. And I think that there is some merit, because the other thing I've learned is we really have no idea what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
Like, we can have all these educated guesses or whatever, but, like, you just don't know if something works on and off the court until you really see it. Like, you can have an idea, but you don't know. And so whether I think they're going to be good enough defensively to actually make the playoffs, I know that he has a plan, and that plan is to score a ton of points. And they have a team set up, if healthy, to score a ton of points. And he also believes in developing talent. And he's getting, he's kind of built the organization. They're going to look into either buying a new D-League team or having a hybrid ownership or something where he's going to have the Timberwolves invest in the D-League in some way. And he also wants to look at revamping the way they do things medically and from a training standpoint to try to cut down the risk. Like he has these visions ahead of whether he can accomplish it or not. I like that he's looking ahead of we need to develop, we need to stay healthy, and then we'll have things on the court to take care of. But you kind of have to get to those spots first before you can really see like the direction of your organization and where it's going. And I like that. I like that vision. I like that he's thinking about that because previous administrations have not thought like that. Like they just haven't. And I think in today's NBA, you need that. Now, I don't know that any of this is going to work, but I think that it deserves to get a chance of seeing how it looks a year, 2 years down the road before we start saying this guy's an idiot or this guy's great. Like, we just don't know. Yeah. It was a lot like, you know, kind of when Mark Jackson started coaching the Warriors. People were like, oh, his commentary is ridiculous. He's not good. It's like, I don't know. He was a really good point guard for a really long time under really great coaches.
Part of it is the biggest thing with Jackson, you have to see the effect that he has on people.
Yeah.
Like,
everybody loves that guy.
I was at his introductory press conference at the finals, and I expected to go in and have it be kind of a hilarious event. And instead, like, Doris Burke's, like, openly weeping if she doesn't get to work with him anymore. Like, everyone is just, like, overjoyed at this opportunity. I have never – like, he's just beloved. He's just so beloved. And I think that – and talking to David Lee last year, he was the same way. He's like, I love that man. I love that man. And every interview with him, everyone loves him if you work with him.
Yeah. And I think that so – and I just think, like – instead of just rushing to judge everything and decide someone's fate before we even see like what they've put together works or not, like I'm just kind of like, I hope the Timberwolves are good. I don't necessarily agree with his vision, but I can see how it will work, and I can see that he is executing a plan he believes in. And so from those standpoints, I can take all that in and just say, let's see. Let's wait and see. I don't think we need to judge, because mainly like – people just rush to judge that stuff so they can say, see, I was right about that guy. I know what I'm talking about. None of us know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I would say that – I can understand your frustration with Wolves fans because they're on edge and you deal with them daily, and that's a complicated relationship. I think – like I've got a few – I'm not down on him. I'm not like, he sucks, it's going to be a disaster. I'm just like, huh. Like there are things that I'm like, and you can explain them and be like, look, AK wasn't coming back. I'm like, okay, all right, fine. And then I think it's looking at like the decisions that were made in terms of free agency. I very much tend to be like, that's kind of weird, and I'm a little bit worried about it. But then I just looked this up. That 2011 team, their top it was Kevin Love, and the next top four scorers in total points were Michael Beasley, Luke Ridenour, Wes Johnson, and Darko Milicic.
Yup.
And that team won 17 games.
Right.
So I'm pretty much saying if you add average players, I can get them to 30, and which was basically last year, and then good players, that gets them to 44, and then you're in the playoffs.
Right. And really,
that's all that they need to do at this point.
And a lot of this like is just come out as, oh my God, Kevin Love's going to leave if we're not a title contender. Well, then Kevin Love leaves. Yeah. Like, I don't believe that's the case. I think it matters more on whether Rick Adelman's still a coach and whether they're a playoff team. But you have to get to the playoffs before you can be a title contender. I don't think they're going to be a title contender as constructed. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, looking at the title teams we've seen recently and looking at what the Wolves, even if best case scenario, let's say Ricky Rubio becomes the best point guard in the NBA and Nikola Pekovic becomes, you know, a top five center in the NBA, that's still probably not a title team. Like, and if Kevin Love leaves, Kevin Love leaves. I watch Kevin Garnett waste years here and then get traded away. Kevin Love leaving is not going to do anything to me. Like, it's just not, you know? Like, I think Kevin Love's the best power forward in the league. I think he can lead this team to maybe a second or third round in a couple of years in the playoffs. But if he leaves, he leaves. Like, I don't get the paranoia of it all anymore.
That's a much better attitude, because one thing that drives me nuts is I don't understand why a lot of team bloggers will resoundingly feel that their guy is different.
Right.
And I've never understood it. I'm just like, when Dwight Howard, the stuff was going through, I had someone, Eddie Rivera, who I love very much as a person and as a friend, but Eddie was like, he basically brought up the fact that Dwight went to a 4th of July barbecue in Orlando as like proof that he was going to stay. And I was like, no, that's not happening. this is what occurs, and that's okay, but you just accept what could happen. I think it's a healthier attitude. You talked about best case scenario, right?
Yes.
What's the Bucks' best case scenario?
Hey, that's a segue.
I was thinking about this morning, writing it. What is the absolute best case scenario for the Bucks next year?
8th seed.
Bucks in 6.
No, you're not allowed to say that. 7th or 8th seed. I think that's wide open enough. I think, let's say
Brandon. What does it look like, though? What does that look like?
Okay. Blair Sanders is the same player he was last year.
Okay. Not better, just the same.
Right. He has to be at least the same. Which I think
better. Like best case is that like he's much better, right?
No, I'm just talking about the team as a whole. Like obviously best cases, everyone gets better and everyone's great. Like, but that's
right. But I think there's something you can talk about with like reasonable like things that we can possibly conceive of. And like I think with Sanders, my thing is he gets better in pick and roll situations. He gets a little bit better at understanding tip ins. He adds some muscle, and he becomes a slightly better version of last year, which is still a damn good center.
To me, like that just all seems like a natural evolution rather than like a jump.
Right.
So that's why I'm kind of saying he's about the same. Okay. I think it's more important the players around him, and not saying they've built around Larry Sanders because I think that would be a stupid idea. But you need him to be the same he was last year. Okay. Like not worse. Like last year cannot be a flash in the pan. John Henson has to be a definite starting power forward in this league.
Really?
One that, which I think is very doable. Like
so
I
you
think
need, you need him to be better than Ersan Ilyasova next season.
Oh God, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you're much higher on Ersan than I am. So there's going to be some disconnect there, but I think that John Henson should absolutely. For them to make the playoffs, he has to be better than Ersan Ilyasova. Like, Ilyasova, I just think, works so much better as a guy off the bench. And Henson can affect the game on both ends of the floor positively, and I think that has to happen. I think you need some wing combination of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Is that how you say it?
I go with Giannis, but yeah.
I'm going to call him Yanni. Yanni needs either Yanni or Carlos Delfino needs to get healthy or Caron Butler. Like one of those guys has to have a career average season in terms of like what Delfino or Butler have been throughout their careers. Like Giannis has to be able to produce like that, or Caron Butler has to have a solid year on both ends of the floor, or Delfino just has to be like a really good shooting and annoyance presence.
Last year.
Yes. And then
last year on a worse team.
And then Brandon Knight and OJ Mayo have to click as a backcourt and have to create opportunities for everybody, not just themselves.
Oh, wait, when I said last year on a worse team, I mean that Delfino has to be as good as he was last year when he was on a better team, so now he's gotta be as good as he was last year on a team that's worse.
I don't know how much better they were last year. That's the thing.
The Rockets.
Oh, I was thinking of the Bucks.
Yeah,
last
no.
year.
What I'm saying is, Delfino was really good last year on a pretty good team on the Rockets.
Yeah.
And now he's going to a much worse team.
Which could make it easier for him to. I mean, it just depends on the role that he assumes, right?
Yeah, right. It could mean like he's got more freedom and is able to be more. It could also mean getting open shots is a lot harder, and that makes it a bit more difficult for him.
Right. So. Yeah, that's fair. And the backcourt, like the biggest key is Henson stepping forward and the backcourt clicking.
And, I felt really weird about this one. I gave them a D.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I... This is a transition year for them, I feel like, right? Like, even with the OJ Mayo signing, I feel like this is a transition year for them where they're going away from a identity over the last couple of years, where they had Bogut, they had Brandon Jennings, they trade Bogut, now Brandon Jennings is gone, Monte is gone. Like, they're clearly trying to find an identity, and I think that identity is somewhere within the combination of Henson and Sanders. And so now you need to see, one, how they look in extended minutes for a full season, and then two, what the players look like around them. And then you can kind of see where they go. So I think that they kept up. They're competitive. I mean, they're kind of doing that Houston Rockets thing, right? That's becoming so popular now. Of they're becoming a middling team with movable assets and young assets, and now they're just going to try to wait to hit that home run. And so I think
I was very confused. I was very confused by what they were doing because if they're going to get rid of Monte and Amon Ellis and Jennings, you're giving up a lot of talent there regardless of how good they actually are.
Right.
Why, you know, you've got this opportunity to go young and you're in this really great draft year, and I get that most of it comes down to Herb Cole doesn't want to tank. I get that. But the Zaza Pachulia thing sticks with me really big. That one bothers me to this day, and it bothers me more because I like Pachulia so much. But I can't get over $5 million a year for a guy with that injury history at that age on this specific team. Why are you paying that much for a guy when you have what you have? I don't understand it. I don't understand paying what they paid for Pachulia, Neal, Mayo, and Delfino for a team in this position. What are you really doing?
Well, I think you're keeping up competitiveness, but I think you're also – I think you can believe that Mayo and Pachulia are movable to contenders after this year. Even with 2 years left on the deal after this year, I think I think there's room to believe, like, hey, sometime in the next year we can trade these guys, if need be. And they have, yeah. I mean, they have some pretty good roster flexibility moving forward. Not great, but I think good enough. And I just think that the guys that they brought in, like, I think you can move Pachulia 2 years, you know, $10.5 million to a contender in need of a big man.
No, I definitely think that they can move him, and that's fair. But part of it is you usually make those moves when you're like, okay, we had Sanders, and then we had a young guy really break out and have a huge season. So now we've got kind of a core. Let's move the veterans and start building around these guys.
I mean, I guess I would look at it as when David Kahn signed Darko Milicic. By the way, I had to. I don't know how to say this without incriminating somebody, so I'm going to try to speak really vaguely but still tell a story. I had to pass along an email address to someone the other day, and so I looked up that email, and in it, you had forwarded me something in which like, let's just say a writer was refuting to you an article I had written on hardwood paroxysm about how dumb the Darko Milicic signing was for the Timberwolves.
Oh, yeah.
And going over it, like, just looking at the reasonings for why it was actually not a dumb signing, it was giggling. I should resend that to you just so you can read it. That was a really pointless story. But here's where the tie-in is that I think that when the Timberwolves signed Darko to a 4-year, $20 million contract, what he needed to be was Zaza Pachulia, like, current Zaza Pachulia. So I get, like, you're signing him as a backup center, I would assume. You're signing him as a backup center for $5 million a year. That's not terrible if you're a contending team. And I don't even mean like title contention. I'm just saying, like, you can realistically make the playoffs. I think the question is, can the Bucks realistically make the playoffs without needing a lot of good fortune to go their way?
I'm looking at their money breakdown on shamsports.com. Congrats, yeah. Mark Deeks, on your SB Nation gig. He hasn't had in the Sanders thing. It probably hasn't gone official yet in the books. So I'm doing the $11 million plus what they're owed next year. Is they've got $38 million on the books. So you're looking at $49 million before options or after options if you exercise all of them. And that's not bad, right? You got $20 million in cap room.
Well, actually, it should be like 45 because he's got the qualifying offer for Sanders, right?
Right there. Well, there you go. So it's okay. Like 45. So they've got a lot, they do have lots of flexibility, and so I got to remember to have to do this, is I get hung up on, oh man, OJ Mayo's making $8 million a year, but it's also like, well, one, he's not going to, like, OJ Mayo's not going to drop off the face of the earth, knock on wood. Like, he's just not. I don't think OJ Mayo's going to be one of those guys that just vanishes into oblivion. He may never be great, but he's also probably not going to be terrible. He's just going to kind of be what he is. And you have to have the money somewhere.
Right.
And they don't have, I think it's, and that kind of changed my mind too, where I was like, well, maybe I was too harsh on this. Maybe I need to go back and give them a better grade. Because if they get like a great rookie point guard in 2014, right?
Yeah.
And then they set themselves up, they're still going to be able to pay that guy a max extension. Even if it's not a point guard, whoever it is that they get, they're going to be able to pay that guy a max extension, and it won't be until after all of this money is cleared the books anyway.
Right. So, I mean, I think like them being in what I've classified as like a transition year, I think you can understand where they're going, or at least what they're doing. Like, they're kind of just trying to tread water right now while they kind of circle the white. How many dumb cliches kind of throw into this. They're trying to tread water while circling the wagons and figuring out where they are as a team, like going forward. And I think that that is a good position. Like, if you don't want to tank, which I don't know that they necessarily should tank, you know, with Henson on board, with Sanders on board, like, there's a certain point where you kind of have to learn how to win. And so I think that they're one of those teams in a position to really kind of just, like, try to go the Houston Rockets route of stay competitive while acquiring assets. And so, like, that direction is fine. I don't know that they went about it the right way, which is where I would say you could give them a C+, you could give them a D like you did. I would find either grade to be accurate, because I think there's good in what they did, and I think there's, you know, a lot of misguided attempts at executing that in what they did.
I guess your ideal lineup for them is going to be Luke Ridenour, because that's really their best starting point guard. And Ridenour is very serviceable. Like,
yeah, I mean, I love Luke. He got really screwed over the last 2 years just from circumstance of he had to play a lot of shooting guard.
Yeah.
Which was unfair for him physically, which took a toll on his body, and just, like, the type of player he is. Like, he's not a shooting guard.
Yeah.
Like, he's a point guard. He's probably a backup point guard, but I think he's a lot – I think you'll see a surge from him this year that he wasn't allowed to do the last couple of years because of the circumstances. Now, I don't know that means he'll be great, but I think he'll be better than we look at him now.
So Ridenour, Mayo.
Yes.
You hope that Giannis Antetokounmpo is so good that he takes over Caron Butler's spot. It's not likely to happen because the Bucks have kind of been like, Caron Butler is our hero. Which I love Tough Juice, so I have no problem with. I've got no problem with this idolatry. Henson overtakes Ersan Ilyasova for the starting power forward spot because he shows up so good. And then Sanders.
Hell, what if even... Henson is so mobile and so long.
Don't go down this road. I know where you're going.
Hear me out. Luke, Mayo, Henson, Ilyasova, and Sanders. And the reason it works is because Ilyasova can stretch the floor on offense, and Henson can cover ground on defense. Why not?
I need an average small forward. That's what I need to think of here. It's difficult because
just say Rudy Gay to piss off the few Raptors fans that are listening.
Yeah, but that one's actually too easy because then he can just play off of it. Let him shoot.
So you're looking
just
for a guy?
Just kidding. Listen to the Raptors podcast. I'm really big on him. I guess, you know. See, now, damn it, now I'm talking myself into it, because I'm
yeah,
but your lateral foot speed you're losing. Who cares? You got Larry Sanders inside.
Yeah. You've got, and Henson is just, like, Henson, I think, is actually mobile enough to pull it off against teams that don't go all that small.
And their offensive rebounding rate is, like, 65%.
Oh, my God. He would destroy on the offensive boards. Between him and Sanders and, I mean, Sanders would never put it back in, but Sanders and Ilyasova? That's not bad.
I'd have to look up what Ilyasova was on tip-ins, but I remember him being pretty good on tip-ins. His offensive rebound rate last year was only 7.9, but...
I got it right here. Ilyasova was 48% on tip-ins. Not great.
Not great. See, that shows you. Don't trust your eyes.
Better than Larry Sanders, though, who was 44%.
Not surprising. So, yeah, they would have tons of offensive rebounds. And maybe that's something to talk about. You gotta play slow with this team, right?
Yes, because I mean the idea behind playing fast is you have a talent advantage, and so you want as many possessions as you can in that talent advantage to maximize the impact your talent has against the other team's talent, right? Or you want to play such a hectic style that because you can stretch the floor, a lot like Houston did last year, that it wears down the other team and you can, you know, get some cheap open looks from three in with this style that will hopefully go in and, you know, kind of rack up the points for you. Whereas you want to play slow because you want to grind things out because you don't have the talent, right?
Now my head's exploding because you just said two words that are just like Houston Rockets.
So you want them to play fast like the Houston Rockets?
I don't.
They don't have the shooters.
I'm just thinking, like, Luke Ridenour is Jeremy Lin. O.J. Mayo is James Harden. Giannis Antetokounmpo is Chandler Parsons.
That's your problem, is O.J. Mayo can't run a pick and roll.
No, I know, but that's the thing is, yeah, that's true. No, I think your target is basically run the pick and roll with Ridenour and either Sanders or Ilyasova, stretch the floor to the corners with Mayo and Delfino.
Yeah, I mean, you want to roll with Sanders, you want to pop with Ilyasova. Luke is really good shooting those little pull-up jumpers in mid-range.
Delfino and Mayo are sneaky on backdoor cuts.
Yeah. But maybe I think you can do that. I mean, you want to make sure your defense can get down and set up, right?
Yeah.
Because you've got Henson, you've got Ilyasova on the boards, and you've got Sanders protecting the rim. So I think you want to play slow enough to allow that to happen without them being exhausted. And then you run that – maybe you can run that Houston Rockets, like, style of offense just in a half-court game. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I really hope that Sanders is – I hope that we don't get caught with Sanders not being as good as he was last year. I really hope that doesn't happen. He was really fun last year, and he's got a lot better attitude than, say, Andre Blatch, but we've just seen this happen sometimes with guys where they have that year, and then they get the contract, and then things go down.
Ooh, I may have just found a comp for him. It's possible he had a very Sam Dallenberg type year once.
Yeah.
Which, not ideal, right?
Not ideal.
I mean, I guess that... But if that's worst case scenario, I mean, there are better ways to spend $11 million a year, $10 million a year, whatever it is. Right?
Yeah.
But it's not a horrendous way to spend it.
New Bucks tagline. Not horrendous.
We could have spent it much worse.
I'm going to miss last year's team. I really am. I don't mind bad basketball, and they were bad sometimes. They were a team that was – when they were bad, they were really bad, and when they were good, they were really fun.
Yeah. Like,
there were just a few games where Ellis had it clicking and Jennings was playing within himself and you had Sanders doing his thing and Henson was a lot of fun to watch when he got to play and Ilyasova is a guy I like a lot. They were a very likable team for me to watch last year. The late season games when you're not watching the contenders, you kind of got to pick and choose because so many lottery teams I just can't deal with when it gets to March. I just can't do it.
Right.
Like, I had to go back and watch a bunch of Kings video this month because I realized I was like, I haven't watched the Kings in like 6 months.
Yeah. Like,
just haven't watched them. I'm going back and doing some review on some of that. Oh, before we wrap up today, I did want to ask you. So are you you've been holding it now. I said the other day, like, I'm excited for the season to start. Like, I'm ready. I'm all like, man, guys are coming in for off-season, for preseason workouts, for team workouts. Like, the media guide stuff is starting to go out. We got training camp in about 4 weeks is when we're going to be starting training camp. We've got media days in less than 30 days. I'm excited. Are you still holding out a little bit?
Yeah, I think because, well, one, catching my lady friend up on Breaking Bad.
Right.
We're getting towards the end of season 4, so we're almost done. I think we have like 17 episodes. By the time realistically we catch up, we'll have to include this coming Sunday's episode. So that's probably the next week of my life is doing that at nights. And then this Eurobasket, like I got sucked into Eurobasket. It's kind of like taking me away from the NBA, like thinking about the NBA, which I'm kind of happy with, just for the simple fact that instead of guessing about a lot of things and like trying to figure out how things are going to be, I just get to enjoy basketball. And it really, like,
you don't like hypotheticals much.
I don't like hypotheticals all that much when it's so far away from happening, yeah. You know? And that's what I feel like. The season is kind of around the corner, but we're really 2 months away from meaningful games. And Eurobasket, just, like, it's just fun. Like, I really enjoy watching. People can still not like European basketball as much as they want, but, like, these are extremely talented guys with some very savvy coaches, and it's fun to see Petteri Kapponen, and I'm sure I butchered the pronunciation of his name, but seeing him, you know, finish off opponents for Finland, you know what I'm saying? Finish them off. He's Finnish. That's fun. Like, I've loved Kapponen for a long time.
Sorry, I blacked out real quick. Let's just keep going.
I've liked him for a long time, so I get to watch him play basketball now when I don't typically get the time to watch him play in EuroLeague.
Yeah.
And so it's, I'm able to get sucked in.
I'm one of the guys that doesn't like it. I've gotten away from, like, years ago, I was the annoying jackass that was like Eurobasket sucks, don't care, why are you talking about it? Now I'm like, no, I've talked about it. It's fine that other people like something I don't. It's I've got no problem with you tweeting about it. I find it entertaining. I don't have any impulse to watch it, which sounds weird because I like a lot of bad basketball. So
yeah, I'm surprised.
Why
don't? What is it that you don't like? Like, it's not NBA by any means, but I feel like it's pretty good.
You can't define it, man. I swear to God, it's not xenophobia. It's really not. I don't know what it is.
It's definitely xenophobia.
And my eyes just glaze over.
Really?
I never have anything really resonate with me.
You gotta watch Spain then, because Ricky's throwing behind the back post entry passes,
mm-hmm.
which is fun. Sergio Rodriguez looks like a crazy man.
How's he shooting?
Rubio, I don't know. He didn't take a three yesterday. He missed a layup attempt, I think. He missed a jumper. He hit a layup and he hit a jumper. He actually has looked pretty good on like these little short, like 9 to 10 foot pull up jumpers off of like pick and rolls. He looks a lot more balanced, a lot more comfortable. But in some of the warm up games, when he is taking threes, like that shot motion is just bad. Like that's still bad, but it's different. Like it's weird that it's different from mid range because you would ideally, if you're a pro basketball player, you would shoot the same no matter where you are on the court.
Yeah.
So I guess there are improvements somewhere, but there are some places where it's just like, ugh, that's going to take a while.
But yeah, I consider it honestly to be a flaw. Like I wish I enjoyed it.
Do you know who Brett Gelman is?
What?
The actor Brett Gelman?
Yeah.
You know who he is?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see The Other Guys with Will Ferrell?
No, I didn't.
Oh, never mind then. It's going to be nothing. But Sergio Rodriguez has grown a beard and looks exactly like this guy now. I tweeted a picture of it yesterday, side by side. It's phenomenal. Like, Sergio Rodriguez has said he is keeping the beard because they're winning, but they had to have lost a game at some point in the time it took to grow this beard. So I think he's just trying to look homeless.
So yeah, if you want to catch up on Eurobasket, follow Zach. If you want to obsess about stuff that's not happening at all, I'm your guy.
Perfect.
It's funny you mention that though. My wife's the same way, where she can't get excited about something until it's like right there. Until it's right in front of her, she can't get excited about something.
I honestly think it'll be about, like, because we got Eurobasket until the 22nd, and then you and I are going to Florida for our meeting, right?
Yeah.
Right after that. And then it's a couple of days, and then media day. I think on media day, that's when it'll hit me of, oh, here we go. Like, this is going to be fun.
Things actually have to happen for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very.
Well, this is a good podcast. We had nothing to talk about. We managed to stretch this into way longer. So.
Yeah, I'm sure the fans loved it. You had to see us. You had to hear us complain about Michael Beasley.
Yeah.
I rambled about Flip Saunders for no reason, and then we talked Bucks. Get excited, folks.
We've been getting a lot more comments on this podcast on Twitter, and I've been just having a lot more feedback on it in general. So it seems, our readership or listenership is growing. If you can, please go on iTunes and please subscribe and rate us highly. We are buried at like the bottom of a obscenely long list of sports blogs, including some that I don't think are sports podcasts, some that I don't even think exist anymore, and some I'm not even sure are real. I think they're imaginary. So, and that's bugging me to see us all the way down there. So please go on there. Please give us high ratings. Please give us comments, and please subscribe.
And if you need an easy way to do that, go to cbssports.com, click on the link for this podcast. At the bottom of the page, it tells you the iTunes link. Very easy to do, if you know how to click a mouse.
If not, ask a friend. Get someone to help you.
And then punch yourself in the head.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Matt.